Een van mijn eerste projecten in Beirut is de eminente Midden-Oosten specialist en geëngageerde journalist Robert Fiske opzoeken. Fiske woont al 31 jaar in Beirut. Hij is hier komen wonen in 1976, het tweede van 15 jaar burgeroorlog in Libanon, die tot 1990 geduurd heeft. Al die tijd heeft hij van op de eerste rij de turbulente gebeurtenissen en de verwarrende, voortdurend veranderende allianties en vetes tussen de verschillende bevolkingsgroepen kunnen observeren. Nog gecompliceerd door de Israëlische bezetting van 1982 tot 2000, die op zijn beurt leidde tot de opkomst in dezelfde tijd van de Sjiïtische verzetsorganisatie Hezbollah. Daarna kwamen de jaren van reconstructie tijdens de Syrische bezetting, met de opgang en ondergang van Rafik Hariri, de 14 maart-revolutie na zijn dood in 2005 en nog datzelfde jaar de terugtrekking van de Syrische troepen. Vervolgens de verwoestende Israëlische aanval van juli vorig jaar en daartussendoor de terugtrekking van de Sjiïtische ministers uit de regering en de protesten van de pro-Syrische 8 maart-beweging. Dat allemaal tegen de achtergrond van een mysterieuze reeks moorden op anti-Syrische politici en journalisten.
In the last few articles you wrote, you expressed a very pessimistic view about the immediate future for Beirut and Lebanon.
Well, for everyone in the Middle East, not just here. I mean, Gaza, Iraq, Afghanistan, if you call that the Middle East. Yeah, I can't see anything going correctly. Clearly, you know, America's war with Iran is being fought out between, you know, Hezbollah and Israelis, between various groups here like Fatah al-Islam, whatever that may be. You know, America's trying to influence Syria and it's trying to put pressure on this group by getting the Lebanese to attack them. Well, they've already attacked the Lebanese army. And, you know, from the border of Pakistan to the Mediterranean, it's chaos. It's a very, very serious situation.
Especially now that Russia is going to re-employ their marine bases in Syria, Latakia and Tartus.
If you've had a look at Russian marine bases in Tartus, I wouldn't get too excited about it. I mean, overgrown, dirty, rusting, forget it. I'd be more worried about Russia climbing the North Pole.
But they're arming Syria, and at the same time, there's a massive rearmament of Israel, Saudi Arabia, Egypt going on.
No, that's been going on in the Middle East for 50 years. There's nothing new about that.
But there's a big increase now.
Yeah, and I mean, the Americans have just lost 190,000 weapons in Iraq. They don't know where they are. 115,000 helmets, 135,000 flak jackets. But, you know, it's always been the policy of the West here. Sell weapons, give weapons. And then get the people to have local leaders who will have all these weapons and do what we want them to do, and that's what we're doing. I mean, in one way, you see, the return of Russia could be a good thing.
A stabilizing factor.
No, what was happening was that when... It's not stabilizing, it was a balance. I mean, when I came here, there was the Cold War, Soviet Union. And it was only when that went that the motive power of the Western powers suddenly took off, you know. And then, of course, we started invading people and calling people terrorists again and so on. We invaded Iraq.
Mm-hmm. For the fifth time.
Well, we've been doing... We regularly do... invade Iraq, yes.
You also have the thing about the elections last week, which are explained in various different ways by the various different parties who all claim victory.
Yeah, well, that's Lebanese politics. I mean,
but you have at the same time a pretty heavy reaction from the States.
Look,
on the diplomatic level.
Who cares? I mean, I don't think people care very much here what the Americans think. See, they've lost a war in Iraq. It's a hell disaster. Everybody knows that. And Americans say, Syria's behind terrorism, Iran, you know, the attitude of people is give us a break. I mean, nobody believes that America can win a war in the Middle East. The Israelis couldn't win last summer. They were brought to a halt, a mile from the border. The Israeli army will tell you that privately. The Americans have lost everything they claimed they were doing in Iraq. They're not winning in Afghanistan. The real winner in the region is Iran. Mm-hmm. Iran had two major enemies, the Taliban, whom it called the Black Taliban, and Saddam Hussein. And American blood has been paid to get rid of those two enemies. And Iran hasn't fired a shot. That's the story.
And then the employer al-Maliki was pretty much connected with Iran and Syria anyway.
The majority in the government of Iran work for the Iranians. Of course they do. Yes, of course.
If we talk about this war of last year, the July war, In every article you write, you always keep stating that it was Hezbollah that triggered off the war.
Yes.
Whereas there's a lot of evidence that the Israeli army was already planning this war for a long time.
But they didn't start it. But they didn't trigger it off. No, they didn't trigger it off. The first act was the Hezbollah cut through the wire, killed three Israeli soldiers, captured two others, then a tank came through and blew up five, and then the rocket started.
But they've done this several times over the past 7-8 years. And it's been a reaction like that.
No, the issue... Oh, yes, it has.
Yeah, but not like the full-out destructive war that we had last summer.
Look, the invasion... No, that's completely factually untrue. The 1982 invasion, which cost the lives of 17,500 people, was triggered off by an attempted assassination in London. Nothing to do with the border here.
This part of Beirut has not been bombed at all last year during the war. Apart from the lighthouse. But if you go to Dahiyeh, then it's completely destroyed.
That's right, yeah.
Completely destroyed.
Of course, because the idea was to bomb the Shiite areas where Hezbollah came from. That's what they did.
Because when you were following the war from the west, it seemed like they were bombing more generally all over Beirut and all over the country.
Well, they were certainly bombing.
They
were certainly bombing generally over the country. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they bombed a huge factory in the Bekaa Valley, which made
dairy products.
Well, yeah, and they bought another one that was the official importer for a major British department store. Mm-hmm. The bridges, the main bridge over there. At Hamana. It was fairly widespread.
Do you think it was intentionally meant to destroy the economy and the tourism as well?
Oh, yeah.
Well, what's the interest of the Israelis in that?
If you take, for example, Marwahin bombings of last summer, this was a Sunni Muslim village. It wasn't a Shiite village.
Mm-hmm.
And it was partly destroyed, and the people were ordered to leave. They left, and they were attacked from the air and killed 29.
Mm.
Almost half of them children. It was Sunnis, not Shiites. The army barracks was attacked in Hazmiye, and almost all the soldiers killed there were Christians. They attacked a bridge near Juni, killed a jogger, an old Christian man who was jogging on the bridge.
About Fatah al-Islam, what do you think is actually behind it?
I don't know.
Because there's the Seymour Hersh theory of the Welsh Club. And
I know all about Seymour Hersh's theory. I know Seymour Hersh, of course, I know. Look, nothing happens in Lebanon by chance, and nothing happens as simply as it looks. Fatah al-Islam's existence, which certainly shocked some of us, Fatah al-Islam's existence must have been approved by more than one person. They came in here undercover during the Hezbollah-Israeli war. That's why we didn't notice it. Thank you, Hezbollah and the Israelis. Was that part of the purpose of the conflict? I doubt it. I don't think the Syrians directly fund people like this. You know, the latest mail packages arrived from Damascus. But the Syrians certainly would not disapprove of what's happening. It puts enormous pressure on the Lebanese government. It makes fun of the Americans. Iran, I don't think Iran. I think Iran's too far away and care about it. Hamas? That's more interesting. Other Palestinian groupuscules in Ain al-Helwi.
Most of the members they killed or caught by now were not Palestinians.
Sorry?
Most of the members of Fatah al-Islam that got killed
makes
or
you
caught
believe
by
that?
Now. What I read in the Lebanese press, they were Lebanese, they were Saudis, they were Malaysians.
Yeah, I've seen several bodies and they all appear to be Lebanese or Palestinians. I haven't. Mm-hmm. I was told that one of the dead in Tripoli, whom I saw, was a Bangladeshi. I'm pretty sure he's not. I got a picture of him. When the first battles began, I, by misfortune, knew the Lebanese officer who was storming into the building where they were in the center of Tripoli, and he invited me to go with him, so I did. So I saw them shoot people down. I didn't see any. They may have been Palestinian. They certainly weren't Saudis. Believe me, there weren't any Bangladeshis. You know. But you always find whenever a national army is fighting a determined enemy, you'll be told they're foreigners who've come across the border, like foreign fighters in Iraq, right? I mean, it's 128,000 foreign fighters in Iraq, and they're all wearing American uniforms. You know? And anyway, you know, this issue about foreign people, We drew the borders of the Middle East. People who live here don't see those borders in the same way as we see them.
Okay.
You know, there's a guy I was talking to today who has a Syrian friend who for many years thought that Saddam Hussein was his president because he lived so near the Iraqi border.
At the same time, it seems that the army in Lebanon is now getting very popular as the only functioning institution left.
Well, it is the only functioning institution left.
Mm-hmm.
Is it getting popular? Armies that
seems to be getting a lot of respect around here.
Does it so?
If you speak to people.
Which people?
Mostly Christian people, obviously.
Thank you for answering your
question. But the army is representing, I mean, everybody's represented in the army. But
it is.
The Americans are now modestly arming the Lebanese
army. No, modestly. Last summer they armed the Israelis to attack Lebanon. Now they're arming the Lebanese army to attack Palestinians, or to fight them.
Sure they don't arm them enough to be able to arm Israel.
Yeah, right. I think that the Lebanese army saved this country from a real serious civil conflict in January. And it's done remarkably well in doing that. In the street fighting that took place here in January, it didn't kill a single Lebanese. I think the Brits would have shot somebody in those circumstances, you know? It's now lost almost as many soldiers at Nahal Barad as the British have lost in Iraq. Think about that. And its commander, Michel Suleiman, has spoken very wisely. I mean, he said at one point some weeks ago, the army will remain united. What the people of Lebanon want is up to them. Which, in a part of the world where generals usually tell the people what they want, was quite good. He may end up as the middleman for the next presidency. He says no, but generals who say no often mean yes.
He's nominated himself for the presidency, more or less.
Well, has he?
A few days ago.
Not really. I don't believe that. I don't agree with you. But certainly he's out there as a possible candidate. Mm-hmm. When you've got the present president saying he's going to hand over the army, it's fairly easy for the army commander to say he'll be the president. But who's the alternative, you know? That's the thing. There are various things you notice. For example, when newspapers dare to criticize the army, not international papers, Lebanese ones, the army immediately on wanting to comment, why did you do this? And that's not a very healthy thing in a, quote, free country, unquote. You should be able to criticize your army. And some of the support for the army, as it's demonstrated in the streets, is a bit juvenile. But there's no doubt that without the army, I don't know if we'd be having a peaceful night in this restaurant tonight. But how long that'll last, I don't know. As long as the Americans keep on resupplying, and the news agencies refer to the American-supported government of Fouad Sinoura, more and more people are going to say, I don't think I want to be supported by the Americans. Do you think most Lebanese want to be supported by the Americans after last summer? I don't think so. They'd like the Americans to leave.
Yes. So you think the popularity of Michel Aoun is a sign of even the Maronites realizing this after last summer?
I think Michel Aoun is cracked. I don't know. His supporters are a bit cracked. I don't know the answer to that question.
Because as we were talking about the signs of the Cold War maybe returning or some similar situation, it seems to be the same here in Lebanon. The sense that there's a possibility. Many people are afraid that we're going to end up with two parallel governments here. We have the same situation of lack of dialogue and everybody's starting to...
That's right, yeah. Good problem.
Okay, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Hezbollah vierde dinsdagavond een groot feest ter herdenking van de Nasr min Allah, of goddelijke overwinning zoals ze die zelf noemen, in de oorlog tegen Israël op 14 augustus 2006. Gezien vanuit het ruime historische perspectief van de pan-Arabische anticoloniale strijd tegen het Anglo-Saxisch Zionistische imperialisme, hebben ze inderdaad een ware kentering veroorzaakt. Maar veel Libanezen zien de vernietiging van de infrastructuur en de economie van hun net heropgebouwde land begrijpelijkerwijze eerder als een bittere Pyrrhus-overwinning. Voor een stadium vol enthousiaste aanhangers, waaronder behoorlijk veel Maronitische christenen die de vrije patriotische stroming van Michel Aoun steunen, waarschuwde Nasrallah Israël en de VS dat ze bij een volgende poging om Libanon eronder te krijgen maar beter rekening kunnen houden met, ik citeer, een kolossale verrassing die het aangezicht van de oorlog en van de regio zal veranderen, unquote. Een uitgebreide beschrijving van de avond kan u vinden op de weblog Midden in het Oosten, te vinden op http://middenoop.wordpress.com. We laten u hier alvast enkele sfeerbeelden horen.
MUZIEK والأخوات، عندما بدأت هذه المعركة عملت أمريكا وإسرائيل على محاولة عزل المقاومة وجمهور المقاومة عن شعوب عالمنا العربي والإسلامي والعالم وعن بقية شعب لبنان والتيارات السياسية في لبنان. وتم التركيز من خلال الخطاب السياسي ووسائل الإعلام الضخمة التي تملكها أمريكا وإسرائيل في العالم على عدة عناوين من أجل تحقيق هذا العزل، وبالتالي إبقاء المقاومة وحدها وجمهور المقاومة وحده في مواجهة هذه الحرب القاسية والعنيفة. أولاً ركزوا على تهمة الإرهاب وهم عملوا عليها منذ سنوات طويلة، قد تؤثر في بعض أنحاء العالم الغربي ولكنها لم تعد تؤثر.